Hey, welcome to a Flophouse Mini.
The beauty of that was you just told us right before we started recording that it was going to be perfect.
One take Wellington, that's what they call me. Hey, I'm Stuart Wellington, one of the hosts of the hit podcast, the Flophouse Podcast. You're listening to one of our mini episodes. Now, normally when we record, we've just recently watched a bad movie, and the show is us reviewing it, plus other stuff. Tonight, we're not doing that at
it's
all.
It's just
we're
the doing other stuff.
It's a mini, it's other stuff. If this is your first episode, probably slam on the brakes, hit reverse, pick a different episode. Mm-hmm. Then you can come back to this one when you have a little bit of affection for us and you like our brand of shenanigans.
And you're like, oh yeah, I'm willing to just sort of sit here while they dick around for a while.
I'll put up with these guys. Now, the thing is, you're not just putting up with these guys being me, Stuart Wellington, and my two co-hosts, Dan, that's right, Dirty Dan McCoy,
that's
and
me.
Elliot over there, the main man, Elliot Kalen.
We're wubba joined wubba? By a special... Is that my catchphrase?
Yeah, wubba wubba.
We're joined by a special guest this time. Not only is this this gentleman the editor of our show and producer, I guess, editor-producer, he has been a long-time figure on the show. He helped write the Song of the Summer, He's the House Cat. He edits and adds sound effects and does all kinds of great stuff to our Flop Tales bonus content, which you can access by becoming a Max Fun supporter. That's right. We are joined by musician, comedian, best man at my wedding, Alex Smith. How are you doing, Alex?
What's up, guys? It's nice to see Dirty Dan and Elliot over there, Kalen.
I believe I was also
classic
called the main man. But that's Elliot. Elliot over there, Kalen's main bit is that he's never quite where he's supposed to be. He's always slightly further away than you think he's going to be.
Yeah, I love it.
Man, Alan Moore would write the shit out of that character.
Oh, but he'd be doing all sorts of disgusting things, and it would turn into a lot of
it would turn into a lot of
in jokes about British cartoon characters from the 1940s and 50s, mm-hmm. where I'd be like, I guess I understand this now. Well, wasn't this supposed to be about the great characters of literature fighting crime
Stop
or something?
Getting me excited, Elliot.
I guess you're a snake goddess now too. Okay, mm-hmm. whatever.
Sounds right.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read any Alan Moore, but I did see a
get the fuck out of here.
I saw a panel just this last week or something of a woman jacking off a big frog.
Your beard is very reminiscent of Alan Moore's beard.
Yeah.
That's a point of connection.
Yeah, when you went to the barber to get your beard trimmed up, did you select the wizard picture on the wall?
Yeah, I sat down in the chair. I scrolled through different mirrors like I was in Red Dead, and I picked the Alan Moore.
You said, "Give me the Dumbledore, the Jared Harris, not the Michael Gambon." Oh, sorry, I meant...
Richard Harris.
Richard Harris. I'm sorry, Richard Harris, yeah. Not his son, Jared Harris.
Man,
Richard Harris.
That's the thing. That's a point of contention because Jared Harris lobbied pretty hard to get the role of young Dumbledore in the Fantastic
Yumbledore.
young Dumbledore, Yumbledore. He was so-called...
It's a Dumbledore that fucks. I think we clearly established
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Young, dumb, and full of Cumbledore.
Is that Jared Harris?
Man, he wears that shirt to fucking spring break all the time. And then he bumps into
his students' families who are also on vacation. It's very awkward. But the real awkward thing was that Jared Harris actually lobbied hard to get old Dumbledore the role. So it was him against his father for the role of old Dumbledore, or Obeldore, as he's also called. Yeah.
Obeldoral stain.
Old, cold, and full of Moldledore.
not as popular of a T-shirt. But he still wore it.
Still sells, just not in the same. I mean, the other T-shirt is such a hot seller, and this one is still—it's a solid mid-list seller. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's more of a joke gift that people wear initially ironically, and then you're like, no, I kind of, it's comfortable. It wears into my body.
You see a lot of pictures of elderly people wearing it over the shirt they were already wearing while blowing out candles on a cake.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a really popular one to bring home to an uncle is what it sounds like.
You'll like this.
Yeah, that's what it says in the catalog. There's just a starburst, and inside it says, bring it home to your uncle. Why does your uncle
live in
your
home?
You don't know what he likes. He's your uncle. Well, how often do you see him? Maybe he wants a shirt that says old, cold, and full of mold.
Great, he's your dad's brother. What are you supposed to do with that? You don't know.
Yeah, you don't know him. You don't know him at all. He's got a fake smile on every time you've seen him in your life.
Tell me about it.
The thing is that he's smiling, but in his eyes, those eyes aren't smiling. There's sadness.
Well, those eyes have seen a lot of love, but they'll never see another like yours. So that's really why he's not smiling. Yeah. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Really
of course.
It.
Of
so
course. What a pleasure.
So, Stu, is there any thread running through this episode other than Alex being with us, which is enough?
A phantom thread.
So that's the thing.
or a phantom menace. What if the phantom thread was a sequel to the Phantom Menace?
I think it would go something like this.
Yeah. We explain a lot. Jar Jar keeps feeding Anakin mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Misa want to control you. How does a relationship work on those on that level?
Wow. Writes itself there. I gotta
Guys, am I the only one whose favorite scene in Phantom Thread was when he was ordering breakfast?
And she's like, "You're a hungry boy."
I was in such suspense because I was like, "How is he going to eat all that?" But you never actually see him eating it.
Yeah.
It was like a Groundhog Day breakfast that he was ordering.
Yeah, it's the kind of breakfast that like a character in a movie sits down to and then is like, "Oh, I got to run." And you're like, "What? There's like a full breakfast here."
Yeah. pulls me out of every movie I've ever seen when somebody steps up from a full plate of food.
Yeah.
He might
like,
as well.
The Irishman? Why aren't you sitting down to eat all that food, Irishman?
Daniel Day-Lewis might as well have said, "Give me the Pee-wee's Big Adventure." And they just put down a whole table of breakfast that he would take one bite of and walk away.
Yes. He's ordering from... He's like, "Please, Vicky Creeps, bring me the Mr. T cereal so I can pour it all over my scones."
So, today we're doing something something that we've done in the past. One of the first minis that we recorded was a thing called Miss That Movie. It's become a classic Flophouse mini. People love it. Mm-hmm. I still get emails every day about Rusty the dog. Rusty a Dog's Tale? I don't even remember the name of the movie. That's how excited I am
so
every
memorable.
Time I get one of those emails. I don't even read it. So what happens, I actually originally watched that movie with my buddy Alex.
Yeah, we watched it together.
So, Alex, you're the inspiration for Miss That Movie, and we were talking. I'm like, I gotta get Alex on. He always watches movies that we missed, and so today we finally realized that fantasy.
I'm very excited to be on here, and I sent a text to Stuart about this movie. I'm hoping that got relayed to you guys, and that you haven't seen this movie.
Well,
but
I
this
don't
was
know.
A real.
Also, warning, guys.
The text was not relayed to us.
I've been microdosing THC gummies today, so I'm kind of in a. Let's just say I'm in a weird place.
Wow.
How many? How many of those THC gummies could dance on the head of a pin?
That I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I'm microdosing, so if I like take a handful, it's fine, right?
Remember when we were kids, everything was so much looser, and they had those ads for microdose machines with the guy talking real fast, telling you about how great it would be to just take tiny doses of drugs. Yeah.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. And it feels like he's just talking forever.
Well, yeah, because you're microdosing.
Closer, tiny doser.
So your experience of time is totally out of whack. So you think he's talking really fast, but it's somehow taking him a long time.
Whole time I'm like. Is the food he's eating extra clean because his mustache brushes off all the dust?
Wait, I literally have never thought of that, but I love it. Is that a secret power of mustaches?
It's a thing.
But I haven't been thinking about this.
If you ever look really close at someone who's eating, you can notice their mustache is swishing back and forth like in a car wash, just knocking all the dust off their food.
Yeah.
I gotta stop trimming my mustache.
And the whole time, The whole time, I wish I was inside that food right now. Watching the thing brush me clean.
Yeah, your advice earlier that you should build up some affection for us before listening to this episode has never been truer.
So, Alex, what's this movie that you texted Stuart about and he didn't tell us?
It's called Invitation to Hell.
Oh, I've never seen it.
I have not, but I guess.
All right.
I guess it got lost in the mail.
Is it in the Criterion Collection or?
What Czech New Wave director made this one? Because I may not have been exposed to it otherwise. Was it Jan Nemec?
Well, it's, you know what? It's funny you should ask who it's directed by, because it's a made-for-TV movie, which you might think is directed by somebody you've never heard of.
Yeah.
But this one was directed by Wes Craven. This is a Wes Craven directed... let's see. I got to pull
this. Was it like early in his career, late in his career?
It's from 1984. So,
in the middle of his career.
So yeah.
That was his off year. That was
but
he
directed
like,
under
took
his
sabbatical.
His, under his pseudonym East Craven.
Didn't Elm Street come out in 84? Like that's.
It sounds like that. It sounds like that's around the time, right? But or wait, no. Is Elm Street like 80? I'm spacing on whether it was earlier than 84.
Well, only one way to find
out.
It
came out in 84.
Oh, 84. Yeah, okay.
But he had already made like the house at the end of the street or whatever it's called. Last house on the left.
House
on the end of the street. Last house on the left.
Yeah.
We all agree it's a house. somewhere.
It's the last house. There's no other houses past that one.
Reports vary about where the house was, but
oh yeah, and he made The Hills Have Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't. He's not. I'm going to say he's not slumming it in this. Like, okay. This is not, like, this won a Primetime Emmy for art direction.
Whoa.
It's written by the guy who wrote, like, Universal Soldier. So maybe that's not a great example, but
somebody who has some big ideas.
Yeah, John
Big
Update.
Ideas.
Oh, look at this. Robert Urick, Susan Lucci,
yeah.
Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah. It's got the guy from Murphy Brown who plays, Frank.
Soleil Moon Frye's in it.
What's his name? Regal Buto?
Regal Buto? Gonna lose handbag situation over here. Sorry,
I love me some IMDb.
Yeah. Oh, you'll find a ton of great stuff in the IMDb. This was so.
Yeah, we learned a lot recently about the Gunning Betty Lou's handbag. That was particularly.
Yeah, if at any point my description of this movie gets super boring, feel free to jump back into the universe of Betty Lou's handbag.
I may have to correct you on something, Alex. Did you say it won art direction in the Emmys? According to IMDb,
Nominated. Whoa. Sorry.
Ooh, listen, I'm going to have to look up who it lost to.
Okay. Now, see, I think it's a prize just to be nominated.
Ooh,
personally.
It lost to a production of A Streetcar Named Desire. Ooh, okay. Sorry.
I mean, that seems like a lazy choice on the Television Academy.
It does
part,
seem like
though.
A very lazy choice. Yeah.
But
Anne Margaret as Blanche DuBois, Treat Williams as Stanley Kowalski, Beverly D'Angelo
Treat Williams?
As Stella, Randy Quaid as Mitch. And you know what, guys? We should be talking about this one. Okay.
Oh, Bill Irwin is
open
in it,
on
but
New
not
Orleans.
That Bill Irwin.
Oh, a different Bill Irwin was in it?
Different Bill Irwin, not with an I, but with an E. The guy who's in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Home Alone.
Now, he's also a contortionist, right?
He's old guy in the airport in both of those, in every John Hughes movie, apparently.
Now, in case you were wondering, this is Outstanding Art Direction for a limited series or a special. Outstanding Art Direction for a series went to The Duck Factory, the early Jim Carrey vehicle.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
We're struck dumb.
All right. Well, never mind. Forget it. Continue. So, Invitation to Hell.
Yeah, Invitation to Hell is... here's the thing. So, here's how I found this movie. Is through the pandemic, one of the things that I did to keep myself entertained and to try to do entertaining stuff, not being able to do shows and just my regular stuff that I do both on stage and online. Mm-hmm. We started watching movies on Twitch on my stream, the Big Howl and Possum stream, in my other moniker that is Big Howl.
Okay, nice plug. I like it.
There we go. Big Howl and Possum stream. So we started watching movies on that. That's when Stuart came on and watched Rusty with us.
Uh-huh. Didn't we also watch that Dolly Parton Kenny Rogers holiday special?
We watched a Christmas special with Kenny and Dolly.
It was taped off of like New Zealand TV, so it was all like all the ads were for like summertime shit.
Yeah, the movie was pretty weak, but the ads were all for like sunscreen on Australian beaches. So there was like a nice little treat every 10 minutes or whatever. But one of the things that we started doing on Twitch was just watching a movie. A lot of times, just something on YouTube, and a lot of times we would pick made for TV stuff because we wouldn't have to freak out and worry about the terms of service if something naked happened on it. If we picked a made for TV movie, and this, which we watched with my friend Mandy, who's a great comedian here in Louisville, Kentucky, where I live. This one turned out to be like a real treat from the pandemic for me, where it was very memorable. And I was like, I definitely want to go back and watch that again. And I definitely want to tell other people that they should go check it out because it is great. It's very of its time, but it's got a lot of great art direction, like the as the Emmy awards,
nominated, not quite as good recognized. As Streetcar Named Desire, but up there.
Which feature? There was a different treat. Treat Williams.
It's got. I would argue it's got great. It's got great pacing. It's got great performances, and the value, like the value of it. Maybe not the. It's not like it's clearly not a big Hollywood movie, but the overall value of it is better than what you expect from a made-for-TV film, in my opinion. It's really good.
Now, just to remind listeners at home, miss that movie, what happens is Alex is going to walk us through the movie a little bit,
yeah.
And then we have to determine if we are sad we missed it,
right?
Glad we missed it, or had to not miss it, and we go and watch it.
I'm not sure about the tense of that last one.
I'm pretty sure it's correct.
Let me check my rhyming dictionary. It checks out.
Okay, well, asked and answered, I guess.
I think you guys are going to rate this as sad you missed it once you hear the first 20 seconds of this movie, what happens in the first 20 seconds. So what happens is we are in somewhere in California. We find out it's basically Silicon Valley, and there is a... limo driver driving a limo into a...
Makes sense so far. Checks out. Okay.
Yeah. A limo driver hasn't stolen someone else's car.
Just riding an alligator would be ridiculous. So driving a limo makes more sense.
Driving a limo onto the parking lot of a country club that is called the Steaming Springs Country Club. Out steps Susan Lucci in an outfit that looks like she's about to board the Moonraker. She's wearing like a red like jumpsuit or, you know, like onesie type long suit.
And metal teeth.
Real quick, Dan, you've probably already picked out an outfit that you would wear if you were going to board the Moonraker. What
well,
is
Dan
it?
Was, Dan was sitting...
Specifically the Moonraker?
Was it Dan your housing t-shirt?
I know for days, Stan was sitting at home expecting Jeff Bezos' car to come get him to go on the spaceship. And I know it was a big disappointment for you, Dan, when you found out the launch had happened and they had not sent a car to pick you up. So what outfit did you pick for space?
I basically stapled two really big potato chip bags together over myself, like one on top of me, one below me.
Oh, so not like a sandwich board, like a diaper, like a onesie.
Where I come from, we call that an utsedo.
Yeah. I'm afraid of the, space rays, different kinds of...
And you figure,
space...
what's more protected than potato chips? I better use the space age technology that keeps them pure.
Keeps them crunchy, will keep me safe.
Now, what about your... Now, this covered your arms and legs, too? Or I'm imagining, like, a onesie with your arms and legs sticking out of it.
I'm in sort of a pod at that point.
So these are very big potato chip bags.
Yeah.
Like human-sized potato chip bags.
Yeah, Sam's Club.
Yeah, no, I went to Costco for these.
Okay.
Human-sized potato chip bags. Like bags that hold human-sized potato chips.
Yeah, it holds seven human-sized potato chips. Because when they're that big, you don't need that many of them. Just crack off a piece
That's
and
true.
Have it.
That's true. USDA recommends 1/4 of a potato chip.
I don't know if the USDA recommends any potato chips, really, as part of your daily diet. They'll allow it, but I don't think...
I've been listening to.
Like, Dan, there are four food groups: potato chips, ice cream, Cheetos, and spicy Cheetos.
Yeah, I'm sorry to report that it stands for U.S. Dumbass.
Oh, shit.
Oh!
Oh, shit.
So Susan Lucci was in a limousine going to space.
Okay, so the two women in bikinis step out into the parking lot, and they distract the limo driver. He's like, he's sort of gawking at them, and he almost runs over Susan Lucci. But she drops to the ground... very quickly, like just sort of as if she's like spring loaded, right? She just sort of drops back to the ground. The limo drives over her, and then he freaks out because he knows that she's the director of the country club, and he must have killed her. And he slams on the brakes, turns around, she pops up behind the car, does a finger gun at him with two fingers, I believe, and the rear windshield of the limo shatters and he melts in his seat. And then she comes around and laughs at his like charred, burned up corpse in the front seat of the car.
So she just lost.
You did not undersell this, Alex.
Yeah.
How?
I think you're going to find that out, Dan. I think I'm going to tell you what I tell my son Sammy all the time, which is if the movie doesn't want you to know something yet, they won't tell you, and they'll tell you when they want you to know it. He's big on the like, who's that? What's that? Where's that? What's that going on? Where's that? Yeah. We're slowly in pieces watching episode 2, Attack of the Clones, which is the worst Star Wars movie probably to watch slowly in pieces because it feels like it'll never end. And he's kind of like, what's that character? What's that? You'll find out. It's supposed to be a mystery. Like
it's a mystery. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Who's Sifo Dyas? Don't worry. Well, actually, it'll all be explained. Well,
it's hard to actually tell in the Star Wars movie because it's either you'll find out, just hold on, or you'll never see that character again. It doesn't matter. Just buy the toy. Like, they'll get no more screen time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Stuart, you said I didn't undersell the movie. So let me ask, should I have said, no, the first 20 seconds or whatever is boring? Or what should I have said instead to prepare you all for Susan Lucci finger gunning a guy to death?
No, what I was saying is that you didn't undersell. That means you sold it, right?
Yeah, you sold it accurately.
Is that what it means?
Right. Yeah, that's what I meant.
I think I heard that wrong. So, okay. I didn't undersell it.
I did a double negative.
Now, Alex, what is it? What is it in your makeup that makes you see compliments as a tax? This is something I think we need to get into.
Well, I just always feel like I could strive to do better, Elliot. Honestly, I just feel like I could. Like I could be working harder.
That actually sounds pretty good in a producer, guys. Do you think we should keep him
All right.
So, I don't know. I don't know. I could literally describe every scene of this movie now. I've now watched it 3 times, and I could.
This is a Flophouse mini, which means we only have an hour and a half to tell people things.
We only have the rest of time.
We only have three to four times as much as an average episode of 99% Invisible, with 1/100th the information.
So after that happens, the limo driver melts, and Susan Lucci comes over and laughs at him, and then we cut to. A family driving across the country. And this is Robert Urich. What's her name? Joanna Cassidy.
TV from... Spencer. You could hire him if you like. Robert Urich.
And also TV's Lazarus Man, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Was he in Ice Pirates?
Only one way to find out. Siri, <Damn. laughs> was Robert Urich in Ice Pirates? I'll look into that.
Pull up
now.
Betty Lou's handbag and find out if he
Let's
was
find
in
out.
There.
Let's open up Betty Lou's handbag. Yes, he played the role of Jason. Thank you, Siri.
Yep.
So, it's Robert Urich plays Matt Winslow.
Oh.
His wife is Pat Winslow, played by Joanna Cassidy from she's Dolores in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and she's in she's in Blade Runner.
And their superhero son, Bat Winslow.
yeah.
criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. I shall become a Bat Winslow.
I'll address as a Winslow. The family from Family Matters? Well, a different family called Winslow.
There's a older boy, maybe 8 or 9, and then there's a younger girl, maybe 5 or 6, something like that. You meet this family, you find out they're nice. You find out they're nice people, and you find out that he's some kind of genius who's being brought to work on a top secret tech operation for some company. You find out that, sorry, I just spilled tea on my keyboard, so it's distracting me right now.
Oh, no. Is it going to be okay?
It's going to be fine. It's funny. I spilled it on a spot where I had already spilled tea before. And okay. I haven't had those keys for like a couple months.
Oh boy.
So, plus side of a producer is that they care about the work they do. Drawback is that he doesn't have keys that work on his keyboard.
That's the trade-off. When you look for a great producer, you say, do his keys work? They do. Then I'm not interested.
Yeah.
You're like, how's your tab? Do you have a good...
That's what they say in producer schools. They say, put on all your keys and then take one key off.
Well, the thing I've been telling my Twitch chat is that I will replace the keyboard when I have a third key go out, and I think we might have done it here tonight.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's a three strikes rule with the keyboard for me. we get to their house in the neighborhood that they're going to be living in, which is apparently a pretty tight-knit but wealthy, affluent neighborhood in Silicon Valley where everybody works on computers and stuff. And they are sitting down for their first night together. And oh, we find out that the kid, the boy, we find out that he's very smart and into computers because while the movers are moving all their stuff into the house, he's sitting at a computer. And one of the movers is like, what are you playing, a game? And he goes, no, I'm checking the inventory. And the guy goes, what? Why are you checking? Because apparently this kid has an inventory of everything that was in the house. And the guy makes fun of him. And then he says, well, I know that a candy bar is already missing. And the mover goes, oh. And then he like sneaks a candy bar out of his pocket and puts it like up on the kid's bed. Like the kid caught him. And he says something about kids these days or something. But you learn that the kid is very good at computers and brilliant.
And extremely, extremely anal. If he is down to the candy bar.
Microchipped this candy bar. I'm not really sure how this machine, this program works.
Sir, this piggy bank had 97 pennies in it and now shakes it. It sounds like it only has 96. Here you go. Takes a penny out of his pocket.
This Ziploc bag had 14 Camel bucks in it. Now there's only 13.
The kid is also a heavy smoker. He smokes Camel Wides.
It was 1984. It was a different time.
Saving up.
Yeah. So then the family is sort of gathered around the fire, and I think they're like singing a song or something. They're doing something very wholesome and very quaint, and everyone's having a great time. And then we get the first jump scare of the movie, and it's because there's some rustling outside. And then some people wearing masks like suddenly pop up in like a sliding glass door and you go, and you freak out. And it turns out it's one of Matt Winslow's old frat buddies and his family who are already higher ups at the company. This is the guy from Murphy Brown, the guy who plays Frank Fontaine on Murphy Brown, Joe Regalbuto, I think is his name. And,
Regalbuto, which is Latin for royal butane lighter. Regalbuto.
I thought it was beautiful ass. Latin for
I mean, I don't speak Latin, so it's possible.
Yeah. So the kids run off and play together. We find out that the other kids are a little creepy. They're a little weird. We don't know why. We find out that there's a country club in town that has a Halloween party coming up that everyone loves. That's everyone's favorite thing. It's a Halloween party, which is weird for a country club, I think, but it makes sense for the scary movie for it to be a Halloween party.
I mean, country clubs could celebrate Halloween.
A lot of time at country clubs. Do they do Halloween parties?
Ever been to a country club in my life? I don't want this getting out there in the world.
About you? I remember you used to be like, this Daily Show job is really getting me down. I got it. This week I'm heading to Mar-a-Lago and I'm not coming back till the day before we return.
I don't. Yeah.
You'd be like, me and Don were talking. He's got some good ideas. And I'd be like, what, Don, do you mean? Donald Trump or Donald Trump Jr.? And you'd say both. I just call them both Don. They both got great ideas. I'd be like, I don't know, Dan. And he'd go, you'll understand someday, or maybe you won't, peasant. And then he would laugh and laugh and get in his limo.
Yeah, I'd cackle and I'd drive off in my jet-powered Ferrari.
Yeah. You'd say, just had a great mask-free week down at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, and at the time it meant nothing. There were, you know, but now that's ominous, you know.
At that point, it was because he had previously told us that everyone wore masks for the Halloween.
Yeah, no, I would laugh hard and be like, you'll get it someday. And then
you'd say, Fidelio, and you'd walk away.
mm-hmm. All right, so.
So it's Halloween at the country club.
Yeah, there's a Halloween party coming up at the Steaming Springs Country Club that everyone in the neighborhood belongs to, and that Tom,
Steaming Springs is the name of the club or the town? I forgot.
Steaming Springs is the name of the country club.
Okay, because it sounds like a country club from a Cinemax softcore movie where everyone's it's time for our story night at Steaming Springs. Tell us a tale, you know. And then,
well, they were trying to come up with something hot sounding. I'll just say this. A little clue there. It has to be hot sounding.
Say that Steaming Springs is the only way to straighten them. Springs are notoriously curled.
Dan, you don't want to straighten them. No, that you then you just get a a rod. That's all that with a very thin rod.
Pretty worthless. Pretty worthless, I gotta say.
Now, I'd say Dan getting a new mattress and opening it up and being like, these springs, they're so coily. Once again, I have to correct the factory's mistake. And that you call Stanley Steamer, and Stanley Steamer's like, it's a living. I guess I'll do it.
Okay, so there's a moment at the end of the night that night. There's great. I will say the exposition in this movie is done really great. Everything's sort of doled out really quickly and really cool, really well. We find out, we get to know where everybody is in really efficient ways. And at the end of the night, there's a great love scene between a great love scene. Now I sound like a pervert, but
you meant in terms of like Romeo and Juliet, like the great love stories of history.
On the skinometer, Alex.
I think it's pronounced skinometer.
Yeah.
There's a 5-star buck naked fuck fest.
Set to Peaches, fuck the pain away.
I believe there probably is a movie called 5-star butt naked fuck fest. and those stars are Robert Urich, Susan Lucci, stars of Invitation to Hell.
Directed by Chest Craven.
And Craven is spelled Cravin apostrophe.
Exactly. Yeah. So so here's
what
I'll say.
You don't see that as the last name that often, an apostrophe at the end. But you know what? It works.
You know. A bust mare on Sex Street by Sex Craven. They're really not thinking very. These parody porn titles are really unimaginative.
Sex Craven is a great porno name.
Cream 4, okay. I guess so.
So yeah. I just mean
they don't even have to change the name of Shocker.
I meant to get Wes Craven's New Nightmare and accidentally got Sex Craven's Nude Nightmare. And, you know, I watched it anyway. It's not as scary, but, you know.
Still scary.
Still a little scary. It's a good premise. It's hard to do that premise wrong.
I think it's actually called Nude Quite Bear.
At that point, it's very hard to tell what it's a parody of anymore. It's Sex Craven's Nude Quite Bear.
Very redundant. Bear.
It's not even a
porno. It's just the same movie with everyone naked throughout the whole thing.
And it would probably just be The Hills Have Boobs, I'm guessing. Or The Hills Are Boobs would be
thighs. Thighs, I feel like, rhymes with eyes. I think there's, well, anyway, let's move on. Like,
we could do this for hours, when we bring these
presentation pitches to the estate of Wes Craven, I think
Craven's ghost.
Yeah.
We have some interest from the Reality Kings.
Sir, we're interested in all of your work. We'll get to a Music of the Heart porn parody eventually.
We'll do a Vampire in Butland. We'll get there, but it's not an A release.
It's not what you're known for, Mr. Ghost of Wes Craven.
It's John Carpenter's Ghost of Wes Craven. That's the movie.
Ghost of Breast Craven?
It's John,
now there's a pun on the name of the director of the guy?
It's Schlong Carpet Hers, Ghost of Sex Craven.
Wow. It's really conceptual now, but sure, I guess.
Yeah, but John Carpenter's like, whatever, man, I'll allow it. Can I do the score? Yeah. Sure, yeah, we would love that.
That's my name now, probably. So it's just a nice little candlelit lovemaking scene where afterwards she essentially says, I'm so excited. I'm no longer going to be poor and, you know, struggling, and my husband's going to be, you know, working hard, and we're not going to be getting the thing. She says that she's excited to be part of a higher society or whatever that, you know.
Sure.
So next day is his first day driving to work, or riding to work. He rides with Tom, his friend that we met earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, checks out.
And Tom has a guy in the back seat who is shadowing him and bossing him around and being kind of shitty to him, who is apparently the representative from the Steaming Springs Country Club that is deciding whether or not Tom gets to join. So you know that this is like a tough thing to be able to join this country club, right? And then we get to the company that he's now working for, which is called Micro Digitech. And what he's developing...
Right there, that's right up there with the fake technology company from Shattered Glass, which I think is called Juked Mictronics or something like that. Mm-hmm. Where they're like, come on, how did you not know this guy was making stuff up?
So Micro Digitech is making a suit because, as Tom says at some point, the government wants to put someone on Venus in like 3 years, which seems a little ambitious in 1984, I gotta say.
It was morning in America. We were ready to do big things then. Communism was on the decline. Venus was what everyone was talking about.
Yep. Yeah. So we needed a suit that you would be not only. So here's the goals of this suit that are laid out as we sort of find out as we see the scenes of them developing this suit. Already, it is highly heat resistant because it's hot on Venus, apparently.
Sure. Very much
so. You want to have a suit that can withstand hundreds and thousands of degrees, right? Mm-hmm. It also has a laser beam that pops out of the wrist, Taxi Driver.
Sure.
Spring-loaded
laser that comes out of the wrist.
Man, imagine if he had access to a little laser gun. That would be crazy.
He would have destroyed that guy's whole hand, not just shot off the fingers.
That guy, it's Harvey Keitel.
I was just going to say, that's necessary, though, in case you do need to save a prostitute Jodie Foster from Harvey Keitel on Venus. Get to Venus. Yeah. You really make a connection with this young lady, and you got to save her from the people who are exploiting her. You need that laser. So I get it. Yeah. I understand.
Man are from Mars. Jodie Foster is from Venus. I know.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Exactly. Now, it also has a flamethrower.
Need it. You need it on Venus because it's not hot enough there.
That doesn't seem super.
Tell you what you need
out
on Venus. You need a water thrower.
So some sort of ice propulsion thing like Sub-Zero has or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or Scorpion. Throw a spear at somebody.
Magic?
Get over here. Yeah, magic ice. Yeah.
I mean, well, here's the thing. The thing that this guy has been brought on to, because they want to make the suit absolutely. They want to make it the spacesuit of the future. And one of the things that he discusses putting in it right away, and this is our lead guy, Robert Urich, discusses,
Spencer,
is he's going to make it so that when you put this suit on and you look at something, you can see whether it is human or not and whether it is benign or not. So it'll tell you if you're looking.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a moment where he's talking about, and he says it's mostly reading auras at this point, and it's amazing.
I think that's like an early level cleric spell.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a magic suit that's heat resistant. Might come in handy later on, in this movie, and it can see whether someone is human or not, and whether they're evil or not. We meet the guy's secretary who tries to give him a binder with some secret information or something. She soon gets fired and disappears because she tries to do that. There's a bunch of stuff about the family getting pressured. Oh, we meet the boss of the company, which is Kevin McCarthy. McCartney? Oh,
yeah. McCarthy from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And
It's a Good Life segment of Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And UHF, right? He's the guy in UHF.
No, that's Weird Al.
Got it in one, Elliot.
Yeah. If you're thinking about a normal Al, just dial up the weird by at least 50%.
Well, that's the way I remember when Weird Al was not famous yet, they'd have to introduce him at shows and they'd go, "Let us prepare you for what you're about to see. We've all known Al's, but what if they were a little weird? Get ready. Now that you're prepared and you understand the premise of his bit for weird. Al." Mm-hmm. And they didn't always call him Weird Al Yankovic at the time, but Weird Al.
They're like, normal Al's are always singing the top hits of the day, but what if those Al's who sang top hits were weird? The hits would be weird too. Here they are.
A normal instrument for an Al to play would be like a guitar or a trumpet. Right. But this Al's a little weird, and he plays an accordion. Okay, let that rest in your mind a moment you're used to it.
Yeah.
You've all heard Beat It, but what if it was slightly different and we took a letter away?
He's always misunderstanding what songs are about. That's what's weird about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love it if it turned out Weird Al was not writing those songs, but he thought he was doing accurate covers. And what's weird about him is his hearing is such that he thinks those are the lyrics to the songs.
Yeah. Yes.
He's like, I don't get it. People put me in the humor section. Each of these covers is with respect and almost totally identical to the original song, including the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. I'm also one of the few successful cover musicians in history, and I don't know why that is.
I don't know why I've had a multi-decade career just covering the top hits of the day, but hey, man, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I guess it's because I stay current.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he moves with the times, and you love that. You love to see that.
I don't sing My Bologna anymore. Not a parody song, but my understanding of the actual song that they sang.
Yeah. Now, Amish Paradise is a real reach.
I said, why is Coolio singing about the Amish? I don't know, but I love it anyway, and I want to show my love of it by just making this tribute to him, a totally note-for-note, word-for-word cover that is not different from the original in any way.
Accurate music video that just, you know, depicts the things that already occurred in his lyrics.
I don't even know
I called up Coolio. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't even know why I called Weird Al. I should be called Accurate Al. But you were saying Alex. So he called up Coolio.
He called up Coolio and he said, "Hey, can I do this?" And Coolio famously said, "Yes," over the phone. "Please do it."
And it turned.
I love it.
Weird Al's friends finally prevail on him to get hearing aids, and he's listening to his back catalog and he's going, "Oh God, oh God, no, 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 no."
I've offended so. I have so many apology notes to write.
Dear Coolio. And I just say, even if it's an apology note, if you're getting to write Dear Coolio, then you've made it in life. I don't know what else you wanted to achieve. You're like Alexander crying because there's no more kingdoms left to conquer.
Yeah.
My dearest Coolio, I must take weird pen and weird hand to write you this apology.
Dear Coolio, the front is terrible.
Someday.
The Germans have pushed us back.
Someday these terrible song wars will be over.
So at some point in all of this, we meet one of the shittier neighborhood kids comes over, and that's when we start to get an impression that something is really wrong here.
Sure.
You know, because one of the kids comes over and it's not Tom's kids. It's a different kid, and he's very like mean. And he's very like aggressive, and he loses playing one of the son's like computer games, and he throws the little computer console thing on the ground and stomps on it because he loses. And that's when we get the impression that there's like some pod people thing type thing going on.
I mean, that's just the thing kids do, though, right? Is they get mad and they break stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Maybe I'm reading too much into it then. Maybe everything's going to be fine.
I'm not faulting you. I'm faulting the film at not understanding that kids break stuff all the time.
Sure.
I'm saying Invitation to Hell, you burnt. Anyway, continue, Alex.
Yeah, so then there's a near accident between the whole family and Susan Lucci in her limousine.
Mm-hmm. And, did she get a new driver or is she driving it herself? Yeah.
She has a new driver. She also has, like, there's some cops that come out and immediately defend her and, like, and hustle Matt away when he tries to get her insurance information and stuff.
What if it was the same driver and he's still all melted, but he's like, it's a great job. The benefits are really good. I can't leave it. You know, you got to allow for mistakes from the boss every now and then.
He's just tugging on little strings with his few muscles that he has left.
I mean, on one hand, that's a happier ending than like just shots of him in his apartment having lost his job and being all melty and like not being able to make ends meet.
Well, but then he's like, maybe it's time to rethink my career. I wasn't enjoying being a driver anyway.
Right.
I always wanted to be a teacher. Maybe it's time to get my degree.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's better for him, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Then they just roll him into a high school classroom in an aquarium at some point, and and he teaches.
Yep,
some kids.
A back to tank.
A beautiful story.
It's called Dangerous Melts.
Since the dawn of time, screenwriters have taken months to craft their stories, but now three Hollywood professionals shall attempt the impossible. break a story in 1 hour.
That's right. Here on Storybreak, I, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
the creators behind award-winning shows like Video Game High School,
have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Now, an awesome movie starts with an awesome title.
I chose The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
Mine was Christmas Pregnant Paradise.
Okay, next we need a protagonist.
So I've heard Wario best described as Libertarian Mario.
And of course, every great movie needs a stellar pitch.
In order to get to heaven, sometimes you gotta raise a little hell.
That's the tagline!
Check out Storybreak every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jordan Morris, creator of the Max Fun scripted sci-fi comedy podcast, Bubble. We just released a special episode of Bubble to celebrate the launch of our new graphic novel. At SF Sketchfest in 2019, we recorded a live show with Allison Becker, Eliza Skinner, Mike Mitchell, Cristela Alonzo, and special guests Jean Grey, Jonathan Colton, Jesse Thorne, Nick Weiger, and a bunch of other cool folks.
We suspect he'll show signs of mutation when in a state of excitement. Now, Annie matched with him on Tinder, so she's going to act as the honeypot.
I do enjoy being called a honeypot.
Hey, you know what's better than honey? Gravy.
Oh, yeah, can I be the gravy sack?
Out now on MaximumFun.org and wherever you get podcasts. And pick up the graphic novel at your local bookstore today.
Hi there, the Flophouse is sponsored in part by Squarespace. With Squarespace, you can turn your cool idea into a new website, you can blog or publish content, you can sell products and services of all kinds, and much, much more. How does Squarespace help you do that? Well, it gives you beautiful, customizable templates created by world-class designers, everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, free and secure hosting. You know, if Elliot were here, I'm recording this a little after the show. If Elliot were here, this is where he'd be like, hey, Dan, I got an idea for a website. Can Squarespace help me? And I'd be like, yeah. And he'd be like, oh, it's like, it's called an Evite to Hell. If Susan Lucci wants you to go to hell and you don't want to go to the post office, you can either use stamps.com or you can go use Evite to Hell and see whether you want to go to hell, and you can see which of your other friends are going to hell. You know, you always want to check to see if you're going to have friends in hell before you decide whether you're going to go to hell too. But if you're interested in any of this, not my idea but in Squarespace, go to squarespace.com/flop for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code FLOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now back to the show.
So, yeah, so we find out Susan Lucci's name is Jessica Jones.
Oh,
that's so Jessica Jones.
So it's an MCU
she's very,
title.
She's apparently
okay.
Very powerful. Yeah. We meet these shady cops. We find out that she's very powerful. She knows all of the Winslow family by name, and she knows a lot about them. And she starts to plant the seed that she wants them to join Steaming Springs Country Club. Mm. The next thing that I think we see is Tom and his family, the only other like normal people that we know in this town. They are standing there in Steaming Springs doing the ritual to join the country club, which is they're standing in front of a big, huge, steaming door that has rock walls on either side of it, like it's a cave. And there's a ritual where Susan Lucci makes them say things like, they have to say something like, do you forsake all for the club? And they go, yes, we forsake all for the club. They essentially sell their souls to the devil to join this country club. And then they step into the doors and all this steam is pouring out and it's clearly very hot in there. And that's what the steaming spring is. It's apparently hell, right?
Oh. The titular invitation to hell.
Sounds cool to me.
Yeah. And then so Susan Lucci comes to Micro Digitech. She wants to talk to Matt again. And she wants to see the top secret suit that he's making. And the boss makes him do it. So he takes her in there, and there's a moment where we see from the point of view of the helmet. He's just got the helmet sitting on the like a table there. And we see the helmet see her, and the helmet says, non-human, Malignant.
Oh, no.
Amazing, what? Right? So Matt comes back to work the next day, got a new secretary. The secretary's been disposed of. And Tom has been promoted. So Tom is now at a higher up the company. We meet him. We meet him again. He seems like weird and off and grumpy for just a second. But yeah. Then pretty quickly, he turns back into his cool self and he tries to convince Matt to join the country club. So it's like kind of unclear. They don't become like soulless husks. Uh-huh. You know, there's clearly like some, they're still themselves to some degree, even though they've been taken over by this, whatever this
sure.
thing is, right?
This evil force.
Even though
they've
forsaken all, there's still like a little bit left.
Now, we find out Tom's wife has a new car, which seems like kind of unnecessary, but it matters at a certain point later in the film, because this is a very smart film, again. Tom's kids come over for a slumber party. We find out that they're shitty now. They're like the other shitty kid. Apparently, it's worse than kids, what happens to them.
Yeah.
This is revealed in a very funny scene, great scene, where Robert Urich hears the TV on in the middle of the night during the slumber party. And he comes down the stairs, and he sees that someone is watching the kind of footage that you see in, like, you know, like in Fifth Element when they're showing her all the tragedies of the past or whatever. It's basically just like on the street wartime
yes. uh-huh.
footage. It's something like, really traumatizing.
We're putting together a montage of like the greatest hits of like lousy things happening.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't even know that it's a montage. It's more just like riot footage okay. or war footage yeah, yeah, or something yeah. like that. I don't know how much it is a montage, but it goes on for a while. And he comes down and he sees just one kid. It's very creepy, shot well. It's great. It's you know, Wes Craven, and he's and this kid is. You see the kid backlit in this chair, just staring at the TV. It's one of Tom's kids, and he comes down and he says, "You shouldn't be." Robert Urich comes down. He says, "You shouldn't be watching this." He turns it off, and he turns, and the kid has like a big smile on his face, like he's watching a war and he's enjoying it or whatever, right? And he just goes, "You shouldn't have done that." So but Matt is freaked out about the club. He doesn't really like the idea of the country club, but his wife really wants to join. The kids really want to join. And at some point we go to the country club and we see it. There's a lot of beautiful people there mm-hmm. in bikinis and otherwise.
So like parkas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
parkas.
They're wearing like if you opened a book of different outfits, oh, okay. they're wearing like every available outfit.
There's two people in a horse costume. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At one point,
you unlocked all the cosmetic upgrades for the game.
Yeah, so and you just want to use them all.
Whatever you want.
Sure.
Yeah, totally. So the boss at one point says the great line, Robert Urich goes to his boss to complain about the fact that his secretary has been fired. And there's another really great, I only bring the scene up because there's two really great lines in it. One is that the boss goes, "She just wasn't company timber." And Robert Urich does the dramatic thing where he stands up from his chair and turns around, you know, and he goes, "Timber? Are we talking about people or trees?" And then at the end of
that
scene,
you know he cares.
That's a great line.
Yeah,
that's a genuinely great line.
Really, really good. Really good. And then at the end of that scene, the boss,
Bruce Springsteen,
says, yeah. At the end of that scene, Bruce Springsteen pops in and goes, "Ha!
We can't afford that, Elliot. Come on.
Sorry. I'll change a little bit at the end so it's more affordable.
At the end of that scene.
Yep. Everybody's got an invitation to hell. Everybody wants an invitation to hell. I don't know the rest of the song.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This could be really good. Mm-hmm. That could be really good. We should do that and tag it on the end of this episode.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah.
So the boss, meaning Kevin McCarthy, he says the line, "We just want," as Robert Urich's walking out, he says the line, "We just want you to be one of us."
Just
one of us.
Google gobble.
Right?
But he's making a Ramones reference, not a Freaks reference. Yeah.
Not a Freaks. That's the thing. He doesn't know where it came from.
He doesn't know the original version of it. That's the sad, that's the scary part, that our cultural our film culture is disappearing so rapidly, you know.
Mm-hmm. So the one thing I forgot to mention at the country club, when they go to the country club, Robert Urich, while he's on the tour, he hears a woman screaming in what he thinks is pain or for help. And he goes and he sees the door that Tom and his family walked through earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh.
And there's all this like steam billowing out from under the door.
It's Steamy Valley.
Mm-hmm. And he puts his hand on the door and he goes, ah, like freaks out because it's hot, right?
Now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody's got an invitation to hell. Because punks like us, baby, we're invited to hell. Do, 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 do. Invitations, bow, bow, they'll take you to hell. Invitations.
The thing I neglected to mention is that, much like Jonathan Richman in There's Something About Mary, Bruce Springsteen just pops up regularly with a guitar.
He's at like one of the
throughout
height,
the whole movie.
I mean, not that he's fallen. I mean, he's the man who brought back Broadway, but you know, this was really at the one of his high peaks, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Invited to hell. I was invited to hell.
That one took that. The melody on that one took me a second.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard. I'm going to blame Bruce Springsteen for that because it is not. It's a catchy song, but it's not a natural song. And that's, I can't think of too many other Bruce Springsteen songs. So we're done now.
Yeah. Okay, so so when he touches
everybody's
the hot door,
getting invited to hell. Now we're going down and going to hell. All
right. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
57 channels invitation to hell. 57 channels invitation to hell. I thought of another one.
Yeah.
So the. Susan Lucci catches him trying to open the hot door, aside from obviously
come
being a door to hell.
Come on up, invitation. Come on up, invitation to hell. Na, 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 na. Anyway, I thought of another one.
We went down to hell. Into hell we dive.
Okay, sorry. Stuart is
I think getting... it would be, and into hell we were invited.
Okay, you know,
yeah.
Cram that in there, right? Sorry. To hell we were invite. So this door to hell.
Revved up like a goose and invited to hell. Invited into hell.
I've been trying to figure out how to invite Rosalita to hell for like two
Rosalita,
two straight
invite
minutes.
You to hell or something like that, yeah.
So this door to these double doors to hell,
the Dumbledores to hell
that are very hot, have a
Dumbledore
little
door to hell.
Yeah,
have a little like you know one of those like they have a keypad
this
that just sticks
hire.
Up out of the
God, and he's been ground. Invited down to hell. Do 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 do.
That's the one.
Can't go to hell without an invite. This.
And Robert Urich tries to open the doors to hell by punching the keypad that's there on its own little sort of podium that sticks up.
That's what you would
and,
do.
Yeah.
Hopefully more of the keys. Hopefully more of the keys work than Alex's keyboard.
Oh,
oh wow.
Whoa. That's right. It's the Flophouse roast of Alex's keyboard with your roastmaster general, Stuart Wellington. Stuart.
I don't know what to say that hasn't already been said about his keyboard.
I've heard of off key, but off board.
I wouldn't press command function with B. Arthur's keyboard.
So Susan Lucci catches him trying to open this door. He's trying to save a woman that he thinks is probably in like a fire or something.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, I thought she said, you must be lost. And he says, well, I thought I heard a woman cry out needing help. And Susan Lucci gets super horned up real fast and says, you know, people can cry out for other things as well, for pleasure. And by the way, this a country club can be a place of great pleasure. And if you join, I can make this a great pleasurable experience for you. Clearly meaning, you know,
yeah,
doors open.
Yeah. Unlimited buffet.
So
I've been to a country club before. I know what she's getting at.
Yeah. I get it. I get it. Ice cream on your birthday. I understand.
midnight buffet.
Yeah, I get it. Yep.
Sure. A free hour at the driving range. I understand.
I understand. Water slides. Yeah. Gotcha. 100%.
So he's really freaked out by the idea of an all-you-can-eat buffet and free hour of golf.
He's like,
and he runs out.
He's like, what they don't tell you is you got to reserve the course like 3 weeks ahead of time. You can't just stop by and claim your free hour of golf. Sure, the driving range is open, but it's not the same.
So he runs out.
Balls off the roof of my house. I need to pay a membership fee for that. Give me the course. Give me the links.
Yeah, he runs out and his wife shows up and says that he needs to come back because Jessica's invited them all to lunch, and she and he says I don't want to do this, I don't want to join this place, I don't want to be here, and he leaves and she freaks out and is mad at him, and then it cuts to them at the whole family at home except for him, worried that he's not even going to come home, which seems
so they didn't even get lunch.
Well, I guess they didn't go to lunch.
I mean, Mike, I guess the whole family except him went to lunch. And they, you know, they got him some and they put it in like a plastic container, but it's just they forgot to put it in the fridge, so it's just been a like coleslaw salad sandwich just sitting out all day. He's not going to eat that. That's
coleslaw
not safe.
Coleslaw salad sandwich?
It's the specialty at the country club, Dan. It was invented by one of the members.
Coleslaw salad sandwich.
Coleslaw salads. What we do is we take a pastrami sandwich.
Go on.
We remove the pastrami.
Keep talking.
We triple the coleslaw.
Uh-huh.
The pastrami goes in the garbage.
We add an extra slab of coleslaw.
And then what we do is we drizzle it with coleslaw, and we put on a coleslaw aioli, which just means coleslaw.
The thing is, you hear coleslaw salad sandwich, you obviously think the coleslaw is in the middle. No, my friend.
No.
The coleslaw is the bread.
Yeah, it's like the double down, but with coleslaw.
You put it between two compressed slabs of coleslaw.
Yes.
You gotta
eat it. What makes it a salad rather than just a sandwich.
Yeah, you gotta eat it fast.
You go through a lot of dry ice to freeze the coleslaw into bricks. But it's worth it.
I was thinking they'd be fried into like latkes or something.
No,
like,
that's what we're held conscious around here.
Yeah. So the
our country club doesn't admit those kinds of people. We have our we prefer to freeze our coleslaw into slabs. Thank you.
Yeah. So the so they're all sitting around the table, bummed out because daddy ran away.
Oh, but belly's full of coleslaw. They don't. That's not something you can regret. Yeah.
They're all obviously working their way through coming down from their coleslaw high that they were on.
Mm-hmm. Oh man!
And then Robert Urich returns with roses and a bottle of wine, I believe, and says, "I'm so sorry," and apologizes to the wife, and they have another nice night together, and you get to really feel the love in this family once more before what happens almost immediately after that, which is after talking to Susan Lucci one more time, the mother and the two kids decide they're going to join the club anyway without Robert Urich.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's a scene.
When they
with
do that? Law. Are they allowed to do that?
Shh. Well, it's funny you should ask that question because Susan Lucci says, I know there's a rule against people joining the club without their whole families. But we're going to make an exception for you because Susan Lucci is smart. She's figured out this is the only way she's going to get Robert Urich on board.
Is if she
gets the kids and the mom already in
there. They pull that shit at the Park Slope Food Co-op all the time.
Yeah. Spencer for hire. Spencer not required.
Wow.
Whoa, did she say that, Alex?
That's not a line
is
from
it
the
implied?
Movie.
It better be.
Or it's like
you better see that glint in her eyes. That means she's thinking it.
It's an off-screen ad lib that they added in post. So then everything goes crazy at that point. right?
Unlike the end of society.
Yes, exactly like that. Basically, from that point on, just imagine the end, end of society. But for TV, so it's, you know, it's elbows and stuff, not asses.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
that's also
you pitching your G-rated pornography.
Yeah,
imagine it's elbows, not asses.
You think it's something, but it's elbows, so it's okay.
Yeah,
it's all just elbows.
Yeah, that's why the Charmin bears are always talking about having fucking toilet paper stuck to their elbows.
It's like I don't know, Brest Craven. This seems like it's not the best. It doesn't seem like this is the best use of your talents. No, this is where it's all going. This is where the market is going.
Elbow Angels 47.
So from this point on, everything that happens is pretty clearly a result of the fact that his family is now in hell, and they've been replaced with some kind of pod people, because the wife is suddenly like, I don't know, hornier, like more mean-spirited.
Yeah.
The dog, they have a dog named Albert. The dog, he comes home after the family has joined the country club and gone through the door. Oh, by the way, when they join the country club, the little daughter, the youngest one, freaks out at the last minute and decides she doesn't want to, but Susan Lucci grabs her and forces her to go through the doors. Very sad. Now, and every time a family goes through the doors close, and then there's a security guard that walks up and, like, stands with his back to the door while it's happening. So,
security guard to hell.
Yeah, he's like the bouncer.
One minimum wage guy they got.
Yeah. Hell has a bouncer, apparently.
People are just dying to get in, except they're not. Nobody wants to go there usually, right?
No. He's wearing a Wilson's leather jacket.
That should be a Bruce Springsteen song. Hell has a bouncer.
Yeah.
But, Elliot, do you want to sing that for a minute?
There's a bouncer to hell. There's a bouncer at the doorway to hell. Better hope your name is on his clipboard. Or else you'll be escorted out by the bouncer hell. Oh, no.
But that would be better than going to hell. So I guess you don't want to be on the list of hell.
He realizes midway through the chorus.
He's like, the premise of the song.
Oh, wait.
Hold on.
You actually don't want to be on the bouncer to hell's list. So here's
bouncer
here's
to
sort
hell.
Of what
do he'll pass you by, bouncer to hell. If you're lucky, I guess. Bouncer to hell. Bouncer to hell.
Yep.
Have I ever heard a Bruce Springsteen song? Possibly not.
I don't know.
Punks like us. Say. Baby, we're the bouncers to hell. Do 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 do. At night we stand by doors of fire.
I think we have gone through the same like six Bruce Springsteen songs twice now. Rosalita, bouncer to hell.
Finally, we got it in.
Yeah.
There we go.
Great. It worked.
All right.
Give us our Peabodys.
So as you can probably imagine.
Mr. Peabody from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
As you could probably imagine, at this point, the wife is now wearing darker clothes.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the middle of remodeling the home to make it more, to update it, make it more modern. Suddenly, she's decided on much moodier colors for the walls. It's like a dark blue. Mm-hmm. There's very jagged modern furniture. She kind of Beetlejuices the house to where it's like, now it's scary and modern instead of being homey. She gets rid of the old upright piano she used to play sweet songs on, and now there's a black grand piano that she's playing, I don't know, like Liszt or something on it. You know, it's really...
She's just
like,
playing the keyboard part from that Linkin Park song.
Yeah. She's in there just tearing up some fiery, fiery Liszt. And the dad comes in, and he sees his wife again, and he starts to suspect something is wrong. I don't think there's too much weird that happens with the kids at this point. Mostly he's just worried about the wife, because what she does is she banishes the dog to outside and won't let the dog come in because the dog is barking at them because they're all demon people or whatever. And then when he goes to work, she takes the dog to the only vet in town who is apparently not a vet. Like he's apparently not in the community that he's not the vet that belongs to the country club because he's a normal guy and
he's not a monster.
He's not a monster. She asks him to just kill the dog. And she says, I would like to be there for it. And he does. He says, I lied to her. I told her I don't do that. Which seems really weird as a vet that you wouldn't give the person the option to be there when you put down
I would do anything with dogs, okay, but I won't do that.
We're stretching out into the other singers. I don't know about this.
I mean, with Meatloaf, the Invitation to Hell.
I mean, it's right there.
Are right there.
Like an invitation to hell.
That really, that would be a great Meatloaf album name, Invitation to Hell.
Can I sleep on it and maybe go to hell in the morning? It's another Meatloaf song.
Invitation to Hell, like, part two.
RSVP.
So the,
did I ever tell you guys that Charlene went and saw the Bat Out of Hell musical?
No.
Oh, wow.
She went with a friend.
Was it good?
Well, she said it was simultaneously the best and worst musical she's ever seen. She'll be mad at me for telling this story on there because she probably wants to tell it. But she did say that before the end of the, before the intermission, like half the audience had already left.
Oh, that's sad to hear.
But was still super fun.
That's I went to one of those Zappa Plays Zappa concerts, and I went with my family, and my family decided to leave after about four songs, and I think the audience was pretty much leaving throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was like it was very deep. It was very deep Zappa. Nothing against that, but it was like it was not a like general admission crowd.
He wasn't playing the hits.
The hits of Zappa.
Yeah,
there are some. I mean, there's some stuff that would keep a crowd going, I think.
Yakov Smirnoff was trying out a Broadway show. I don't think he'd even made it, like, but like he had like a couple of, and I got some sort of, you know, like I got like free tickets to the preview or whatever.
What?
Yeah. And I had a good time. Like, you know, I went.
Really?
Ironically, I would say. I don't want to, like, you know, like, paint myself as too much of a jerk.
Why is this the first time hearing this, Dan?
You were, like, you were a younger man. You were a younger man.
I was a younger man. I went. Yeah, I was a callow man. I enjoyed the first act of it just fine. I'm like, okay, that's enough Yakov Smirnoff for me. Thank you very much. I left at intermission.
Oh,
it was fine.
Dan.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, he'd been trying it out in Branson for a while. Didn't quite make it to the Great White Way, but, you know, Yakov, you did a great first act.
Keep swinging for the fences, buddy. Yeah. That's what Dan says.
But not a great enough first act that you were like, I want to stay for the second act.
No. Well, I had other things to do, Elliot. Another man may not have come to any of the acts.
I guess that's true. I mean, most men did not come to, billions of them didn't go to either of the acts. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't swing a dead cat in this on this world without hitting someone who's never seen Yakov Smirnoff live.
Why are you doing that?
The cat likes it.
What? You a necromancer?
Yeah.
It was the cat. It was the cat's last wishes.
Was to be swung.
To be swung around.
Yeah.
To be used as a unit of measurement. I get it.
The cat said. Yeah. The cat said, "When I die, swing me around like one of your French girls." And I said, "Okay, if that's what you want."
A lot of ghosts in this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, I should mention the aforementioned vet is Bill Irwin, the guy from all of
the old man John Bill Hughes's Irwin, Erwin, not Bill Irwin of Full Moon and things like that.
Yeah, not Mary. Famed clown.
Not FX's Legion's Bill Irwin.
Not the guy I saw at the Irish Repertory Center talking about Waiting for Godot.
What?
Yeah, I wanted to see that show when it came to L.A. and missed it.
It was fun. It was fun.
I've seen him perform with David Shiner a couple times. Great shows.
Enough name dropping. Back to the show.
So I should mention as a bit of, I think, very good and efficient storytelling, the vet guy's wife is his former secretary who disappeared. So while he's dealing with the vet guy and talking about his dog, he's also finding out that, one, that she got fired, two, that she was like snooping around to try to find out about her nephew or something who had disappeared, and three, that she died in a car accident and the car burnt up and there's no evidence of any of what happened to her. All right, So the dog is out of the picture for the family, but safe at this vet who's in on its house somewhere, right? Okay, so there's another sex scene between Matt and Pat Winslow, and she this time scratches his back up because, uh-oh, again, she's a devil person now. And and there's a great scene where he looks in the mirror and he's like, what's going on? And he looks at the scratches on his back and he's like, this has never happened before.
The way you said it made it sound like he liked it, though.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on?
What's going on?
Hey, I like this.
I think it's a little too much for him. I think it's clearly a little too much for him. He gets
this
in the bed.
A little too much for me. He still says it like that.
He's like complaining about it to his therapist later on, and he still sounds turned on. He just can't help it.
I need your help to process this. Yeah. Well, why, so the way you say down, it makes it sound like you actually enjoyed it. No.
The opposite of Dave Foley's sarcastic guy character on Kids in the Hall. So he sits down on the bed, and she, as soon as they're done, she passes out, and she sleeps hard, which is really weird because you don't normally think like a damned person is getting. It's like the sleep of the damed, I guess.
Oh, she's just like it's like Dana out from Ghostbusters.
Okay.
It could be something like that. So he turns to a huge portrait of her that he has on his bedside table that looks like it was taken the same day. And he says, did you join the club? And it shows her face and her eyes spring open and she's like, she's been found out.
Uh-oh.
She joined the club. All right. So I'll get through the end of basically what happens is he gets found out to be very skeptical. He's snooping around at the country club. He fights the guard, the bouncer to hell. He fights that guy, kills him.
What?
Electrocutes him.
So not a very good bouncer.
Not a good bouncer at all.
Or is it like the Santa Claus where they're like, now you're the bouncer to hell?
That would be great if that's how the movie ended, is he's now the bouncer. He slowly just becomes like a little bit bigger.
Robert Urich's now the bouncer to hell.
So now
Bouncer's
he runs back.
The bouncer to hell.
So now he runs back to the house, and this is kind of funny at this point, how many times he's gone from club to house to club to house. But he runs back to his house. There's a very sort of funny scene where he has to fight his whole family. It's the classic, dad has to fight his whole family because they're all possessed.
Yeah, it's called bedtime.
And he throws his...
shit.
America's newest dad humorist, the top dad humorist, Elliot Cable.
Have you ever noticed how there are funny things about being a dad that really only dads want to hear about? Let me tell you about them.
Yeah, it's like, what's up with this hop-on-pop bullshit? Yeah. I'm going to flip the script on you.
Time for pop-on-hop. Wait, what?
Wait.
This time, Pop's doing the hopping.
That's just when you've had a nice IPA. Is your pop on hop at that point?
Yeah. I feel like that's Dr. Seuss with the publisher when they're trying to create a like DSCU, a Dr. Seuss Cinematic Universe. And they're like, hop on pop two. We reverse it. Now Pop's doing the hopping. Cat in the Hat. What if the hat was inside the cat? Wait, I don't know. This isn't. We gotta find new angles
Fox
on these old
and
characters.
Socks. What if the socks filled out inside the fox? What? I don't even know what that sentence didn't even make sense.
It doesn't make sense. Sam Iam's got amnesia. Now the other guy's got to teach him how to like green eggs and ham. You're just taking the original ones and reversing them slightly.
This time the book battles the butter.
This is these studio guys don't know what the fuck they're talking about. No. They don't know which order words are supposed to go
in. And to think that Mulberry Street saw it on me.
The zoo I ran, if I?
Okay, now you're just taking the literally just the words and shuffling them a little bit.
So he throws.
Now
he tells it
from the Ooblex point of view.
So he throws his son and his daughter in a closet. His wife comes at him with like a golf club or something, and he knocks her down and she just passes out immediately. Again, the sleep of the damned.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Microdigitech. He gets his spacesuit. Smart, right? He gets his spacesuit.
Well, he did stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Yeah.
Tom comes in with a gun and says, "We've figured out that you're not one of us. you're a loser, and I'm going to shoot you in the head.
We put the context clues together when you beat up your possessed family and killed our bouncer.
Yeah. You're a creep.
It's like every episode of Undercover Boss.
What the hell are you doing here?
and so by this time, Matt Winslow has the suit on, and he uses the laser gun to shoot Tom, blast him out of the room. And then he puts the helmet on, he gets Tom's car. Remember, we found out Tom had a new car, so we know this is his car.
Yeah.
He gets in Tom's car, he drives to the country club. Now he gets to say that he's Tom in his Halloween costume, which is the spacesuit.
Whoa.
And he goes into the Halloween party. Mm-hmm. Where all the higher ups, everybody who's everybody in Silicon Valley is,
and they're
this
all
Halloween
lined up
party.
For one laser blast.
The guy
well,
who's in the
conga.
Back of,
it's a conga line, so you can just shoot straight through him. Yeah,
so easy.
The guy who is the guy who was in the back seat of Tom's car earlier in the film is dressed. His Halloween costume is a Nazi Halloween costume.
On the nose, a bit on the nose.
Yeah, a little on the nose. He has a long conversation with him about why he's wearing the spacesuit. And then he looks around the room, and there's no humans to be found. You see through his helmet, you see it's all non-humans.
And are they evil or not evil?
Evil. They're all evil.
Oh, no.
Are they Knievel or not Knievel?
Good question.
It does not say how many of them are Knievel. They don't have that technology yet.
That's from Mark II
of the suit. Yeah.
So then he runs down the stairs to go to the door to hell. And he's trying to open it. His first guess at the code for the doors of hell, what do you think it was?
666.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. He hits 666. He mashes 666 with his big astronaut hand first thing. And then
luckily, they sprung for the extra large buttons.
Yeah.
So then he's still doing that, and Susan Lucci comes down, and she's wearing she's wearing like some kind of crazy witch's outfit that's bright red. She looks
It's the keypad that Tom Selleck sells to old people for their doors to hell.
It just said there's just 3 6 buttons, a yes, a no, and operator, and that's
It's the Cricket wireless keypad. Yeah. No, not Cricket. What's
the jitterbug?
Jitterbug. Yeah. So Susan Lucci comes down. She's coming through the door to attack him, and he uses the only time the flamethrower, I believe, is used is right now. And all it is to create a great entrance for Susan Lucci, because he just sets fire to the hallway and she just walks through it easily. It's awesome. It looks amazing.
Worth it.
He gets the door open. He runs through. She confronts him in. He walks into hell. It's very clear. It's like Far Side hell right away. It's all stalactites and caverns and flames and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like people going, oh, in the distance and stuff like that. But then
better than if they're going up close. I mean, that's not fun.
And Far Side hell, it's filled with cows. So many cows standing up.
Cows, those nerdy kids. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Cavemen.
Yeah, that kid with the crew cut, like with a striped shirt and glasses.
Far Side hell is so unfair, because it's just anybody who screwed up in the most absurd way just goes to hell.
But a lot of people are there. They're like, I don't understand the torture. Like, I don't explain the torture to me, because I'm not getting it here in Far Side.
Yeah, you're like, oh, if we explain the torture, we would ruin the torture.
Explain what's tormenting about this. I can't.
No,
yeah, if I explain it, it's not going to be good. It's going to ruin
All their clothes are kind of fucked up. It's like, that's not that big a deal, man. Like, sometimes really nice clothes can be hell too, you know, Dan?
Like having
to wear a suit every day to work.
Yeah. My favorite Far Side cartoon is a hell one, and it's the one where it's two guys sitting on a bench in hell, and the one leans over to the other guy and he goes, "I hate this place." It's just such a great single panel. Really, really good. Okay, so he's standing on a cliff's edge in hell, and Susan Lucci comes up.
Rest in peace, the Los Angeles area restaurant Cliff's Edge, which I was a big fan of, which closed last year. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I'm sorry.
I'm very sorry to hear that. I hate a good restaurant going under.
Yeah.
So he looks down and he sees.
Well, just
like,
thanks for bringing it up.
Kind of...
Just thanks for reminding me. You know.
Sorry.
I appreciate
it. He sees a portal. Am I fired, Elliot?
No. I mean, not
you,
you
could fire me at this point.
We are firing you, but only because you handed that binder or tried to hand that binder to Robert Urich, which was not, you're not one of our people, you know?
Yes, yes. Okay. So he looks down and he sees like some kind of portal or porthole, famously on this show. But
that's a deep cut. That's a zap on Zappa level cut.
I did my research for this job, guys. So he looks down. He sees that he could go. He could go into the neighborhood if he jumps down this cliff, but it's very far. And Susan Lucci tells him he's gonna die if he tries to do it. He doesn't believe her. At this point, it's a
Anakin,
bunch of leap
I
of
the
faith
high ground.
Things.
I get it.
He realizes everything she says is a lie. So he jumps. There's a great.
But everything
this is
the
clearly
other
done,
Susan Lucci says is true, but he doesn't know which is which.
Right. So there's a great. This is obviously just for a commercial break because he jumps and he goes ah, and then it fades to black.
You're saying in a regular movie they wouldn't normally fade out of a climactic scene.
They would pace that differently in a regular movie, but it's very clearly
fade
like
out 3 years later.
Yeah. So then he comes to at the bottom of the cliff in a negative, like the negative, you know, every
like
the film
negative?
Is negative,
okay.
Photo negative version of his neighborhood. He runs into his house. He has a bunch of exchanges with Susan Lucci where she sort of talks to him about how he decides to take his helmet off. She tells him not to. He does it anyway. He takes his gloves off. He takes his suit off so that he can embrace his wife, who is sitting at the piano, and she's unable to get outside of this like blue haze or whatever. He runs over to her. He gives her a hug. He takes all these leaps of faith, and then eventually the whole family is brought together. Susan Lucci freaks out when they all figure out that she has no power over them, kind of an elaborate sense, and she gets sucked back through this like big black hole thing. And then they wake up. All of a sudden, now they're in their regular house. It's been redecorated back to the way it was before.
Uh-huh.
So he's and, like, this is my beautiful house. This is my beautiful wife. I know how I
Precisely.
Got here. Yeah.
Precisely. And then he steps outside, and there's a pretty obviously juxtaposed like special effect of smoke rising from the country club over the hill from their front yard. And that's the end of the movie. Is that the
awesome.
Country club? Country club burns down.
Wow, he really scoured the Shire on this one. Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Where's Sharky and Worm?
And I don't know. The thing that they don't tell you that bothers me later, finding this out later, is so many things are back to normal at the end, but you don't find out is Tom still in hell? Is he on the floor dead at Micro Digitech? What happened to the other consequences of this? Is Grace the secretary? Is she back to life?
Yeah.
The limo driver.
There's all kinds of.
Good Let's, question. Yeah, there's a limo driver. Did he ever get his teaching degree?
I mean, all they had to do was wish to be back together as a family, and they're back to normal.
Yeah.
So I would hope that everybody else is back to normal as well. But
everybody
the movie
else
doesn't seem to want to
drive,
tell you that.
Yeah.
So that is the movie. What do you guys think? Okay. Are you sad you missed it? Are you glad you missed it?
Or had to not miss it.
If we
have to not miss it and we want to watch it, how does one watch this movie, Alex?
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Whole thing. Okay. Dan, you go first.
I will say that I literally sort of two-thirds of the way through this went onto my letterbox and added Invitation to Hell to my watch list.
Cool.
So that's a had to not miss it. It both sounds really funny, and it sounds like it might have that quality that like a dumb horror thing sometimes has, where the ineptness of the plotting kind of makes it creepier. Like it evokes like a dream you might have, where you know it doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense, but it's all the more disquieting because of kind of the nonsense of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I'm sort of curious to see it.
I think that's true. I think it's very much a product of its time, and it's satisfying to me in that way. That it feels like all the conventions of the day is what they're trying to hit, those boxes they're trying to check. And I like all of those boxes mostly. So
yeah, I feel like this is definitely either a sad we miss it or a had to not miss it. So maybe I'm gonna head over to YouTube and look up Bruce Springsteen. What's the name of the movie?
Invitation to Hell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think I will. I'm sad I missed it. I don't know if I'm going to had to not miss it necessarily, if only because I have limited time in my day. But
And you don't want to mess up the YouTube algorithm in your home?
Yeah, I have a YouTube algorithm. I don't want the YouTube. I want the YouTube algorithm to continue to just feed me unboxing videos and QAnon anti-vaccination videos. That's really what I'm on right now.
But it sounds
like a blast. Thank you, Alex, so much for telling us about it. I feel like I lived it through you. And someday maybe I'll accept that invitation to hell.
So, I did end up telling you guys literally everything that happened.
Yeah, you left very little to the imagination.
So, in addition to being a producer for our show, is there anything you would like to plug, Alex?
Oh, of course. I have a weekly radio show that you can check out called Big Howl and Possum. Again, as my other moniker, Big Howl or Howl Dottie. I do a lot of music and comedy under the name of Howl Dottie. You can follow my Twitter account, which is at Howl Dottie, HOWELDADWDY. I'm realizing right now that I forgot to say when my radio show is. It's 10 p.m. Eastern Time on 91.9 WFPK Louisville, Kentucky, which you can listen to anywhere in the world at WFPK.org. There's back episodes of it on Mixcloud.com as well. Big Howl and Possum Radio Hour. I have a Twitch stream called Big Howl and Possum. And then I have a weekly podcast with Patreon bonus episodes that is called Howl Dottie's Fast Track, where me and a guest write a brand new song in one half of 1 hour.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun. It's been going for a little while.
We did a sad country song about going to the movies, right?
Stuart was on it quite a few weeks ago, and then I just recorded an episode with Charlene, Stuart's lovely wife, that will be out next week. This week's show is with Brian Quinby of Street Fight Radio, and let's see the. I have guests on, mostly comedians and podcasters, sometimes musicians, and we talk through writing a song, and then the song is at the end of the episode. So that's called Howl Dottie's Fast Track. Look for that anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm on Instagram as Howl Dottie, Facebook as Howl Dottie. So just look for in my comedy as an entertainer, I am known as Howl Dottie. As a podcast producer, I am known as Alex Smith, my real name. The fact that there's no difference between those two personalities is, I'll just say, is not my problem. And I also produce Charlene's podcast, I Know the Owner, which you should check out. It also has a theme song written by me. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. I think that's, I guess, plenty, but yeah.
We're on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network. There's plenty of other great shows on there. Please check it out. If you like this show and you want to listen to more of it for some reason, you can always support us over at MaximumFun.org/join. Mm-hmm. Am I leaving anything out, boys?
We want to thank our editor, Alex, who's here in front of us. Yep. That's him.
Yeah.
And we want to thank you,
the
listeners.
You're very welcome. I'll say you're welcome instead of yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for putting up with our nonsense. I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Elliot Impeccable Bruce Springsteen Impression Kalen.
And I am Alex Howl Dottie Smith.
Bye.